The orderliness of this more coherent energy is carrying information, and that information is more and more love. If you continued speeding matter up even faster, eventually it would be vibrating so fast as a frequency that it would exist as a straight line. Infinite frequencies exist in that line, which means infinite possibilities exist there as well. This is the zero-point field, or the point of singularity of the quantum, an omnipresent, ubiquitous field of information that exists as energy and frequency that is observing all of reality into order from a single point. We could call this the mind of God, unity consciousness, source energy, or whatever nomenclature you want to use to define the self-organizing principle of the universe. This is the place where all potentials or possibility exists as a thought, the ultimate source of a loving intelligence and an intelligent love that is observing all of this physical reality into form. Therefore, the greater the frequency we experience, the greater the energy. The greater the energy, the greater the information we have access to. The greater the information, the greater the consciousness. The greater the consciousness, the greater the awareness. The greater the awareness, the greater the mind. The greater the mind, the greater ability we have to affect matter. In the hierarchy of universal laws, quantum laws trump Newtonian or classical laws. This is why Einstein said, "The field is the sole governing agency of the particle." For the quantum field governs, organizes, and unifies all the laws of nature and is always directing energy into order by patterning light into form. On our own planet, we need only look at nature to see how Fibonacci's sequence, otherwise known as the golden ratio, a recurring mathematical formula found throughout nature that brings about order and coherence, brings order to matter. Is the zero-point field made of possibilities or thought, because thoughts are possibilities, that is slowing its frequency down, creating order and form? The unified field is a self-organizing intelligence that is always observing the material world into order and form. The more you can surrender to it, move closer to it, and become one with it, the less separation and lack you feel, and thus the more wholeness and oneness you experience. When you as an awareness unfold into this infinite realm of possibilities, you begin to feel connected to the consciousness of everyone, everybody, everywhere, everything, in every time, including your future dreams. Since consciousness is awareness, and awareness is paying attention, the first step to experiencing the unified field is to become aware of it, because if you're not aware of it, it doesn't exist. Thus, the more you pay attention to this field, the more you will become aware of it. There is a caveat, however. As we've seen, the only way you can enter the realm of pure consciousness is to become pure consciousness. In other words, the only way to enter this kingdom of thought is as a thought. This means you have to get beyond your senses by taking your awareness off matter and particles, and instead place it on energy or the wave. If you can unfold as an awareness into this unseen, immaterial realm of infinite blackness, and become aware that you are an awareness in the presence of a greater awareness, your consciousness will merge with a greater consciousness. If you can do this, if you can get out of the way and linger as a consciousness or awareness in this field, if you can keep surrendering to this intelligent love, the same innate intelligence that's creating the universe and giving you life, it's going to consume you. This loving intelligence is both personal and universal, within you and all around you. And when it consumes you, it's going to create and restore order and balance in your biology, because its very nature is to organize matter in a more coherent way. Now you are moving through the eye of the needle, and on the other side of the eye, there is no longer the separation of two points of consciousness. There is one consciousness, or oneness. This is where all possibilities exist. Because you are entering the domain of consciousness, thought, information, energy, and frequency, the bridge that gets you from space-time to time-space is going from being somebody, someone, something, in some place, in some time, to being nobody, no one, no thing, nowhere, in no time. This is the nexus, the threshold to the unified or quantum field. Go back and review figures 11.8 and 11.9. In this realm of infinite unknown possibilities, unlimited new potentials and experiences await you, not the same old familiar ones that you've experienced time and time again. After all, isn't that what the unknown is? An unknown is just a possibility that exists to you as a new thought. When you are in this realm of pure thought as a thought, the only thing limiting you is your imagination. But when in this realm of thought, if you find yourself thinking again about someone, something, somebody, somewhere, in some known time, your awareness, and thus your energy, is back in the known reality of three-dimensional space and time, back to the realm of separation. Since every thought you think has a frequency, the moment you start thinking about the pain in your body, or the advancement of your disease, or the problems at work, or the issues you have with your mother, or the things you must do within a certain amount of time, you are back in this space and time. Your awareness is back in the realm of the material world, and your thoughts are producing the same frequency equal to matter and particles. Review figure 11.10. Your energy is back to vibrating at the same level of the known physical world of three-dimensional reality, so you exert less of an effect on your personal reality. You are back to vibrating as matter, and we know how that goes. As your frequency moves further and further into density, you are moving further and further away from the unified field. As a result, you feel separate from it. In this scenario, if your dreams exist as thoughts in the unified field, it's going to take a lot of time for your dreams to come true. If you are thinking about somebody, someone, something, at some place, in some time, you are not getting beyond your identity, which has been shaped by the totality of your past experiences. You are literally still in the same memories, habitual thoughts, and conditioned emotions that you've associated with all the familiar people and things at certain times and places in your known reality, which means your attention and energy are bound to your past, present, personal reality. You're thinking equal to your identity, so your life is going to stay the same. You're the same personality, trying to create a new personal reality. When I say you have to get beyond yourself, it means to forget about yourself. Take your attention off your personality and your past personal reality. It makes sense, then, that to heal your body, you're going to have to get beyond your body. To create something new in your life, you're going to have to forget about your same old life. To change some problem in your external environment, you're going to have to get beyond your memory and the corresponding emotions related to that problem. And if you want to create a new, unexpected event in your future timeline, you'll have to stop unconsciously anticipating the same predictable future based on your familiar memories of the past. You are going to have to move to a greater level of consciousness than the consciousness that created any of those realities. In the unified field, there is nowhere to go because you are everywhere. There is nothing you can want because you are so whole and complete that you feel like you have everything. You can't judge anyone because you are everyone. And it's no longer necessary to become anybody because you are everybody. And why would you be worried that there is never enough time if you exist in a domain where there's infinite time? The more whole you feel, the less lack you experience, and therefore the less you want. How can you want or live in lack when you feel whole? If there is less lack, there is less of the need to create from duality, polarity, and separation. How can you want when you're whole? When you create from wholeness, you feel like you already have it. There is no longer wanting, trying, wishing, forcing, predicting, fighting, or hoping. After all, hope is a beggar. When you create from a state of wholeness, there are only knowing and observing. This is the key to manifesting reality, being connected, not separate. If time in your three-dimensional world is created by the illusion of space between two objects, or two points of consciousness, then the more one you are with the unified field, the less separation there is between you and everything material. When your consciousness merges or becomes more connected to the unified field, to the realm of wholeness and unity, there is no longer separation between two points of consciousness. This wholeness is then reflected in your biology, chemistry, circuitry, hormones, genes, heart, and brain, thus restoring balance to your entire system. A greater frequency or energy is now moving through your autonomic nervous system, a system that continuously gives you life, whose agenda it is to create balance and order. This energy is carrying a message of wholeness, and as a result, you become more holy. The greater the frequency you experience, the shorter amount of time it takes to unfold in this three-dimensional space-time reality. As we learned earlier in this chapter, when you diminish the space between two points of consciousness, you collapse time. When this illusion of separation no longer exists, you perceive less space between you, an identity living in a body in a physical environment in linear time, and people, objects, things, places, matter, and even your dreams. Therefore, the closer you move to the unified field, the more connected you feel you are to everyone and everything. You, as a consciousness, are in the realm of oneness, and because there is no separation, time is eternal. And remember, when there is infinite time, there are infinite spaces, possible dimensions and realities to be experienced. Wherever you think you are, or whoever you think you are, you are. In fact, there is nothing to try to create because it already exists as a thought in the realm of all thoughts. All you have to do is to become aware of it and observe it into being by experiencing it. Take a peek at figure 11.12 to follow along. As you do this and move your attention from being somebody to being nobody to becoming everybody, you can create anybody. As you move from living as someone to becoming no one to being everyone, you can become anyone. As you can take your attention off something, move into the realm of no thing, you merge with everything. Thus you can have anything. As you move your awareness from somewhere to nowhere, you will be everywhere, and you can live anywhere. And finally, when you shift your consciousness from some time to no time, to become every time, you can be in any time. Now that's becoming supernatural. In the work I do around the world, I have labored for many years teaching our students how to get beyond themselves. I now know the first step in this process is for them to master their body, get beyond the conditions in their external environment and transcend time. When they accomplish that, they find themselves on the precipice of experiencing the unified field. Once they arrive at this nexus, however, they must be taught that there is even more to experience. If learning means making new synaptic connections, the more you learn about something, the more you can appreciate it, become aware of it, and experience it because now you can engage it with a new set of neural networks. It is in the act of learning that you further change or enrich your experience. After all, if you haven't learned anything new, your experience will probably stay the same, since you're perceiving reality with the same neural circuitry as before. Knowledge is the harbinger that evolves your experience. For example, I love red wine, and I lead several wine tours a year in different parts of the world. Many people who come to these week-long events initially tell me that they know nothing about wine. How I translate this statement is that they probably never learned anything about or have had limited exposure to the fermented grape. The truth of the matter is that because they have limited knowledge and experience from their past, they have very limited neural hardware installed to perceive any real taste or nuance. We could say then that they just don't know what to look for to truly enjoy the experience. But what if they learn how winemakers produce wine and understand its history, the type of grapes they use, and why they are used? Then they learn about how the wine is stored in oak barrels, for how long, and why. This would familiarize them with the whole process and reasoning as to what makes a particular wine so enjoyable. That's the process, but now think of that great wine in the bottle. If they are not aware of the plum flavor, the notes of black cherry and currants, its hints of vanilla and leather, the smell of its floral perfumes, its percentage of tannins, and whether it was aged in oak barrels or stainless steel drums, and for how long, then they don't know what to look for, and they are not going to be able to fully experience it. Only in the moment when they know what to look for and what to become aware of, does it exist. We could say then that their awareness changes their experience. I know this to be true because in just 1 week, those same people who initially said they didn't like red wine or knew nothing about it walk away with a whole new experience of interacting with it. After many full days of learning and discovering what to look for, repeatedly staying present and focusing all their awareness on specific flavors and aromas, day after day experiencing all types of wines and deciding what they like and don't like, continuously paying attention and therefore firing, wiring, and assembling new neural connections, those folks get very specific about what type of wine they like. In 1 week, they gain a whole new level of appreciation, awareness, and understanding. Again, the experience changed them. The same is true when it comes to the unified field. If you are not aware of it, then it doesn't exist for you. Yet the more you know about it, and the more aware you are of what to look for, the more you can pay attention to it with your awareness and experience it more deeply. And it should change you. Starting at birth, you're trained to keep your attention on matter and not on energy. You are conditioned into believing you need your senses to experience reality. In other words, if you don't see, hear, feel, smell, touch, or taste something, it doesn't exist. Because of this, the majority of people place most of their attention on matter, objects, and the particle, while taking very little time to put their attention on energy, information, and the wave. For instance, you are not aware of your big toe on your left foot until you put your attention on it. It has always existed for you, but you were unaware of it. The moment you put your awareness on it, however, it comes into being. The same is true for the unified field. The more you become aware of it, the more it will exist in your reality. By focusing solely on matter, people exclude possibility from their life. That's what the wave is, an energy of possibility. The more you pay attention to it, the more possibilities should show up in your life. Because wherever you place your attention is where you place your energy. The moment you become aware of the unified field, your attention upon it causes it to expand. For example, when you place your attention and awareness on your pain, it expands because you experience more of it. If you keep attending to your pain and experiencing more and more of it, it becomes a part of your life. The same thing also happens with the unified field. When you place your attention on it and become more aware of it, it expands. And just as I said about pain, when you experience more of it, it exists as part of your life. Simply by placing your attention on the unified field, as you become aware of it, notice it, experience it, feel it, interact with it, and stay present with it moment after moment, it shows up and unfolds in your reality on a daily basis. How does it show up and unfold? As unknowns, serendipities, synchronicities, opportunities, coincidences, luck, being in the right place at the right time, and moments filled with awe. In my best description from experience, this unified field is a divine, loving intelligence and an intelligent love that is within and around you. So each time you focus your attention on it, you are becoming aware of the presence of the divine within and all around you. As you place your attention on it, the divine should appear more in your life. Since consciousness is awareness, and awareness is paying attention, when you are aware of it and pay attention to it, you begin to merge with it. Your experience of it will literally cause you to become it. And as you unfold deeper and deeper into this unified field, there's more and more for you to explore and experience. If you look at figure 11.11 again, as you move closer and closer to that straight line that represents source energy or oneness, it makes sense that the only way you can move closer to it is by keeping your attention on it and becoming more conscious of it. If you do this correctly, as you journey away from duality or separation and toward unity and oneness, since feelings are the end product of experience, you should feel more and more levels of love, unity, and wholeness. Once you feel and experience more of this intelligent love, three things happen in your life. The first thing that happens is that as you place your attention and awareness on the unified field, as you move closer to source and deeper into it, you experience more of it. That journey carves a neurological path from your thinking brain straight to your autonomic nervous system. Now, each time you venture deeper into it, as you slow your brain waves down, you're building a neurological highway with more lanes, and that neuro pathway becomes thicker because you are using it more. Over time, this enables you to more easily merge with the field. The second thing that happens is that because experience enriches the brain, each time you interact with this unified field and experience it, your brain changes. This is what experience does. It enriches and refines brain circuitry. Now you are installing the hardware in your brain to be more aware of this field the next time you merge with it. Likewise, since experience produces an emotion, as you feel the unified field, you begin to embody it. Thus you embody more of the divine. According to the quantum model of reality, since all disease is a lowering and incoherency of frequency, the moment the body experiences this new coherent elevated frequency, the energy from that event raises the body's vibration into coherence and order. Numerous times in our advanced workshops around the world, when our students' bodies have been upgraded by a new frequency and new information, we've witnessed instantaneous changes in their health. Since the autonomic nervous system's agenda is to create balance and health, the instant we get out of its way, stop analyzing, cease thinking, and fully surrender, this intelligence steps in and creates order. But this time it's carrying a newer, more self-organizing message with a greater frequency from the unified field. That very same coherent energy raises the frequency of matter. It's like changing the frequency of a static-filled radio station to one that is carrying a clear frequency and signal. The body is receiving a more coherent signal. When this happens, you will feel intense love, a profound joy for existence, a heightened sense of freedom, indescribable bliss, an awe for life, elevated levels of gratitude, and a humbled sense of true empowerment. In that moment, the energy from the unified field, in the form of emotion, is reconditioning your body to a new consciousness and a new mind. In a heartbeat, the elevated emotions signal new genes in new ways, changing your body and moving it out of your biological past. The third thing that happens as you move closer toward the unified field is that you begin to hear or experience knowledge and information differently. That's because you've changed your brain circuits and are no longer the same person. You will meet truth on a whole new level, and things that you thought you knew will seem like a brand new encounter. Your inner experience has changed your perception of what is happening in your outer world. In other words, you've awakened. Once you have an experience, a feeling, or better understanding of the unified field, once it changes your brain circuitry, it allows you to experience and perceive reality in new ways. In fact, you will see a spectrum of life that your brain did not have the circuitry to perceive before. The next time your brain fires those networks, you already have the hardware to experience even more of the reality. You are now perceiving more of a reality that has always existed. You merely lacked the circuits to perceive it previously. If on a consistent basis, you can make this journey all the way to Source, see figure 11.11 again, and connect with it, the moment you truly interact with it, you will begin to behave more like it. Its nature becomes your nature, and now more intelligent love is being expressed through you. What are its innate qualities? You will become more patient, forgiving, present, conscious, aware, willful, giving, selfless, loving, and mindful, to name but a few of them. You realize that which you have been seeking is seeking you. You become it, and it becomes you. The discipline, then, is to allow your consciousness to merge with a greater consciousness. Surrender deeper into intelligent love. Trust in the unknown. Continuously surrender some aspect of the limited self to join the greater self. Lose yourself in nothing to become everything. Relax into an infinite deep sea of coherent energy. Keep unfolding deeper and deeper into oneness. Continuously let go of control. Feel greater and greater degrees of wholeness. And finally, as a consciousness, moment by moment, become aware, pay attention to, experience, be present with, and feel more and more of this unified field all around you, without returning your awareness back to three-dimensional reality. If you do this properly, you won't be using any of your senses because you're beyond your senses. you'll simply be awareness. Space-time, time-space meditation. Begin by resting your awareness on your heart, and once you are locked in on the space your heart occupies in space, become aware of your breathing. Allow it to flow in and out of your heart, all the while deepening and relaxing your breath. Keeping your attention on your heart, call up an elevated emotion and sustain this feeling for a period of time while paying attention to your breathing. Radiate that energy beyond your body in space. Next, using any song that inspires you, like the one you used for the meditation in Chapter 5, do that meditation to pull the mind out of the body. Take all the energy stored in your body as survival emotions and liberate it into elevated emotions, using a level of intensity that is greater than the body as the mind. For the next 10 to 15 minutes, listen to one or two songs without lyrics that will induce trance. Now become pure consciousness, becoming no one, no body, no thing, nowhere, in no time, unfolding as an awareness into the unified field. Now it's time to become connected to the consciousness of everyone, everybody, everything, everywhere, in every time, unifying with a greater consciousness in the unified field. All you have to do is become aware of this field, pay attention to it, stay present with it, and feel it moment by moment. You will begin to feel more wholeness and oneness, which will be reflected in your biology, because your body is experiencing more coherent energy moving through it, and you are building your energy field. Maintain this state for about 10 to 20 minutes, surrendering deeper and deeper into it. When you're done, bring your awareness back to a new body, to a new environment, and to a whole new time. Chapter 12, The Pineal Gland. As you now know, when we as a consciousness move beyond the world of the senses in this three-dimensional reality, we can tap into frequencies that carry specific information beyond the vibration of matter and the speed of light. When this happens, the brain processes extremely high amplitudes of energy. Time and time again, we've measured and observed this phenomenon in our advanced students' brain scans. You've also learned that when there is an increase in energy in the brain, there will always be an increase in consciousness and awareness, and vice versa. In fact, it's very difficult to determine whether it is the energy or the level of consciousness that causes these extreme measurements. But I don't think we can separate the two, because you cannot have a change in energy without a change in consciousness, or a change in frequency without a change in information. As you connect to deeper levels of the unified field, the brain is activated by a greater energy that carries specific information in the form of thoughts and imagery. The brain then literally tracks and records this profound inner event, and to the person having the experience, whatever is happening in their mind seems more real than any past external event. In that moment, the increased energy in the form of a profoundly powerful emotion captures all the mind's attention. This is the instant the brain and body receive a biological upgrade. If someone can sit in a chair with their eyes closed during meditation and have a significantly heightened sensory experience without their senses, it begs the question, what is happening in the brain to explain this supernatural effect. To the person having the experience, despite the fact that they're sitting still, it seems more real than any other experience, determined by their senses, that they've ever had. This begs more inquiry. How can we have a fully amplified sensory experience without our senses? What are the specific functions of the brain and body that translate interactions with the quantum field into profound inner experiences? In other words, if we can interface with a more coherent field of information, which then creates such stimulating inner events, there must be a neurological, chemical, and biological explanation for such supernatural occurrences. What are the unique systems, organs, glands, tissues, chemicals, neurotransmitters, and cells involved that could give rise to such intensely profound experiences? Could there be physiological components that are just sitting dormant, waiting to be activated? Four states of consciousness will help provide a framework for the information in this chapter. The first is wakefulness, which of course is when we are aware and conscious. Next is sleep, where we are unconscious and the body is restoring and repairing. Then comes dreaming, which is an altered state of consciousness when the body is catatonic, but our minds are engaged in inner visual imagery and symbolism. And finally, there are transcendental moments of consciousness that are beyond our understanding of reality. These transcendent events seem to change us and the way we look at the world forever. I want to give you my best understanding about the biology, chemistry, and neuroscience of those transcendental experiences. Let's start with the molecule melatonin, which is responsible for all of this. Melatonin, the dreaming neurotransmitter. When you wake up in the morning and return to the world of the senses, the moment your eye perceives light through your iris, receptors in the optic nerve send a signal to a part of your brain called the suprachiasmatic nucleus. It then sends a signal to the pineal gland, which responds by making serotonin, the daytime neurotransmitter. As you will recall, neurotransmitters are chemical messengers that transmit and communicate information between nerve cells. The neurotransmitter serotonin tells your body it's time to wake up and start your day. As you integrate information between all your senses in order to create meaning between your inner and outer world, serotonin stimulates your brainwaves from delta to theta to alpha to beta, causing you once again to realize you're in a physical body in space and time. Thus, when your brain is firing in beta brainwaves, you put much of your attention on your outer environment, your body, and time. That's normal. As night falls and it gets dark, a similar but inverse process occurs. The inhibition of light sends a signal along the same route back to the pineal gland. But now the pineal gland transmutes serotonin into melatonin, the nighttime neurotransmitter. This production and release of melatonin slows down your brain waves from beta to alpha, making you sleepy, tired, and less likely to want to think or analyze. As your brain waves slow down to alpha, you become more interested in returning your attention to your inner world rather than your outer world. Eventually, as your body falls asleep and goes into a catatonic state, your brain waves move from alpha to theta to delta, thus inducing periods of dreaming as well as deep, restorative sleep. By living within the rhythm of our external environment, within this diurnal pattern of wakefulness and sleep, based on where we live in the world, our brain becomes automatically entrained to the daily production of these chemicals at very specific times in the morning and evening. This is called the circadian rhythm. Most of us know that when we move out of this natural rhythm, we become out of sorts, such as when we travel to another part of the world where the sun rises and sets several hours ahead of our normal time zone. This is jet lag, and we need some time to recalibrate. When the body gets out of its natural circadian rhythm, it will usually take a few days to readjust to the new environment's rhythm of sunrise and sunset. This is all chemistry produced from our interaction with our external, three-dimensional world, from our eyes' reaction to the sun and the frequency of visible light. Melatonin induces rapid eye movement, REM sleep, a phase of the circadian rhythm that causes dreaming. As the thoughts and chatter in our head diminish, giving way to sleep and eventually the dreaming state, the brain begins to internally see and perceive in images, pictures and symbols. But before we get into why melatonin is so important, let's take a closer look at the molecular structure of this dreaming neurotransmitter. The process of creating melatonin starts with the essential amino acid L-tryptophan, the raw material responsible for making serotonin and melatonin. To be converted into melatonin, it must pass through a series of chemical changes known as methylation. Methylation is the process of taking a single carbon and three hydrogens, known as a methyl group, and applying it to countless critical functions throughout our body, such as thinking, repairing DNA, turning genes on and off, fighting infections, and so on. In this case, it's part of the production of melatonin. In figure 12.1, we see methylation in action. Because this methyl group is made up of very stable chemicals, the basic structure of the 5 and 6-sided rings stay the same during this series of chemical reactions. However, as different groups of molecules attach to those rings, they change the properties and characteristics of the molecule. Beginning with L-tryptophan, the pineal gland transmutes it into 5-hydroxytryptophan, 5-HTP, which then becomes serotonin. Serotonin is a more stable molecule than 5-HTP, can sustain itself in the brain, and has a more useful function, as we'll soon see. Through another chemical reaction, the pineal gland converts serotonin into N-acetylserotonin, and then an additional reaction turns it into melatonin. And all of this happens in the pineal gland. In a 24-hour cycle, the production of melatonin is highest between the hours of 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. This is important to remember. We now know there's an inverse relationship between our adrenal hormones and melatonin. As adrenal cortisol levels go up, melatonin levels go down. This is the reason why we can't sleep when we're under stress. In antiquity, this served as a biological safety mechanism. For instance, if you were chased by a predator a few times on the way to the watering hole, and then you spotted more large beasts in your territory, your body, in its innate intelligence, would want to prevent you from becoming prey yourself. In such cases, sleep and restoration become less important than surviving. More aptly put, staying alive by remaining awake through the night is more valuable than sleeping and risking death. When the body is trying to rest in this vigilant state, it never gets the restorative sleep it needs because the survival chemicals, like cortisol, have switched on the survival genes. If the perceived stressor is not a saber-toothed tiger, but instead your strained relationship with your ex-spouse, whom you must interact with daily, that chronic stress keeps the survival system activated. Now this safety valve is no longer adaptive, but maladaptive. This type of chronic stress alters typical levels of melatonin, and even serotonin, knocking the body out of homeostasis. But if you lower the levels of cortisol, melatonin levels will increase. In other words, when you break the stress response by overcoming the emotional addiction to those chemicals, your body can go back to long-term building projects instead of constantly dealing with the perceived emergency. Take a look at figure 12.2 to review the relationship between melatonin and cortisol. Melatonin has many other interesting applications. For example, it's been proven to improve carbohydrate metabolism. This is important because when certain people respond to stress, the body takes carbohydrates and stores them as fat. And fat is nothing more than stored energy. This is a result of primitive genes signaling the body to store energy in case there's a famine. Melatonin has also been known to help with depression. It's even been proven to increase levels of DHEA, the anti-aging hormone. For more facts about the importance of melatonin, the dreaming neurotransmitter, see figure 12.3. Now, let's deepen your understanding of all the information you've been studying in this book up until this point. Activating the pineal gland. For years, I spent enormous amounts of time studying the pineal gland and seeking researchers who did extensive measurements of its metabolites and tissue. My interest was in tying together my findings with some ancient mysteries. One abstract in particular piqued my interest. The pineal gland is a neuroendocrine transducer secreting melatonin, responsible for physiological circadian rhythm control. A new form of biomineralization has been studied in the human pineal gland and consists of small crystals that are less than 20 microns in length. These crystals are responsible for electromechanical biological transduction mechanism in the pineal gland due to the structure and piezoelectric properties. That's a lot of words to digest, but let's break it down into two meaningful points. The key words here, in reverse order, are piezoelectric properties and transducer. The piezoelectric effect occurs when you apply pressure to certain materials, and the mechanical stress is changed into an electrical charge. To put it in simple terms, the pineal gland contains calcite crystals made of calcium, carbon, and oxygen, and because of their structure, they express this effect. Like an antenna, the pineal gland has the capacity to become electrically activated and generate electromagnetic fields that can tune into information. That's point number one. In addition, in the same way an antenna pulsates a rhythm or frequency to match the frequency of an incoming signal, the pineal gland receives information carried on invisible electromagnetic fields. Since all frequency carries information, once the antenna connects to the exact signal of the electromagnetic field, there must be a way to convert and de-scramble that signal into a meaningful message. That's exactly what a transducer does. And that's the second point. A transducer is anything that receives a signal in the form of one type of energy and converts it into a signal in another form. Take a moment to look around you. The space you are sitting in is filled with TV, radio and Wi-Fi waves that are all different frequency ranges of invisible electromagnetic energy. You can't see any of them with your eyes, but they're still there. For example, the antenna that picks up a range of frequencies carrying a signal to your TV is transduced into a picture on your TV screen. When you tune in to an FM station, you are tuning your antenna to a specific electromagnetic frequency. The information carried in that frequency range is then transduced into a coherent signal, which is the music you hear with your ears. The study I quoted says the pineal gland is a neuroendocrine transducer capable of receiving and converting signals within the brain. When the pineal gland acts as a transducer, it can pick up frequencies above our three-dimensional space-time sensory-based reality. Once the pineal gland is activated, It can tune into higher dimensions of this space and time, which we learned in the previous chapter is the realm of time-space. And like a TV, it can then turn the information carried on those frequencies into vivid imagery and surreal, lucid, transcendental experiences in our mind, including profoundly heightened multi-sensory visions beyond our vocabulary. This is a bit like experiencing a multi-dimensional IMAX movie. At this point, you may be wondering, since this little gland exists inside my skull, how am I going to exert mechanical stress on the crystals in it, create a piezoelectric effect, and activate the pineal gland so it becomes like an antenna? And how will that antenna pick up frequencies and information beyond matter and light so that it can transduce those electromagnetic signatures into a meaningful imagery, like a transcendental experience beyond this three-dimensional reality? For the pineal gland to become activated, four important things must happen. I will address three of them now, and then I will give you the fourth step when it's time to learn the meditation. 1. The piezoelectric effect. Critical to creating the piezoelectric effect in the pineal gland are the calcite crystals mentioned above and shown in figure 12.4. Remember, these are very tiny crystals, approximately 1 to 20 microns in length. To put this in context, their size can range anywhere from 1/100th to 1/4 the width of a human hair. For the most part, they are octahedron, hexahedron, and rhombohedron in shape. As we already learned in Chapter 5, the purpose of the breathing technique we do before many meditations is to pull the mind out of the body by liberating potential energy, stored as emotions, in the lower three energy centers. As we inhale and contract those intrinsic muscles, follow our breath from the perineum all the way up our spine to the top of our head, and then hold our breath and squeeze those muscles more, we're increasing intrathecal pressure. As I mentioned earlier in the book, this is the internal pressure created when you push up against your insides. For example, when you hold your breath and lift something heavy. The word piezoelectric is derived from the Greek words piezion, which means to squeeze or press, and piezo, which means to push. So it's no coincidence that I ask you to hold your breath and squeeze those intrinsic muscles. When you do this, you are pushing cerebrospinal fluid up against the pineal gland, exerting mechanical stress on it. This mechanical stress translates into an electrical charge, and it's this exact action that compresses the stacked crystals in the pineal gland and creates a piezoelectric effect. The crystals of the pineal gland generate an electric charge in response to the stress you're applying. One of the unique characteristics of the piezoelectric effect is that it's reversible, meaning that the materials exhibiting the direct piezoelectric effect, the crystals, also exhibit a converse piezoelectric effect. Once the crystals in the gland are compressed and are creating an electrical charge, the electromagnetic field that is emanating from the pineal gland causes the crystals in it to stretch as the field increases. When the crystals generating the electromagnetic field reach their limit and can stretch no further, they contract and the electromagnetic field reverses direction and moves inward toward the pineal gland. When the electromagnetic field reaches the pineal gland crystals, it compresses them again, producing yet another electromagnetic field. This cycle of expanding and reversing the field perpetuates a pulsating electromagnetic field. It's no wonder then that I ask you to hold your breath, squeeze and contract those muscles. And it's no surprise that I insist you repeat this process over and over. As you keep doing the breath and holding and squeezing again and again, with every cycle of breathing, you are activating the piezoelectric properties of the pineal gland. The more you do this, the more you speed up the cycles per second of the expansion and contraction of this electromagnetic field, making the pulses get faster and faster. Now the pineal gland becomes a pulsating antenna, capable of picking up subtler and subtler, faster electromagnetic frequencies. Take a close look at figure 12.5. We talked about the movement of cerebrospinal fluid during the breath in chapter 5, but let's build on the teaching. As the fluid enters the brain, it moves up through the central canal, through the space between the spinal column and the spinal cord. From this juncture, it flows in two directions. First, the fluid moves into the fourth ventricle, followed by the third ventricle. As the fluid travels from the fourth to the third ventricle, it passes through a narrow path or channel, and nestled right at the back of the third ventricle rests what looks like a tiny pine cone. That's what pineal means. This is the pineal gland, and it's about the size of a large grain of rice. Second, the cerebrospinal fluid also flows around the back of the cerebellum to the other side of the pineal gland, surrounding the entire gland with pressurized fluid. By increasing the intrathecal pressure, you funnel a greater volume of fluid into the chamber of the third ventricle, as well as from the space around the cerebellum. So when you hold your breath and squeeze, this extra volume of fluid exerts pressure from both directions up against the crystals, causing them to compress and create the piezoelectric effect. This is the first event that must take place to activate the pineal gland. 2. The pineal gland releases its metabolites. Cerebrospinal fluid moves through a closed system called the ventricular system. Review figure 12.5. The ventricular system facilitates the movement of this fluid from the base of the spine up through the spinal column through the four chambers of the brain called aqueducts or ventricles and back down to the sacrum, the base of the spine. When you inhale and follow your breath to the top of your head and then hold your breath and squeeze up and in, you are accelerating the cerebrospinal fluid. On the surface of the pineal gland are tiny hairs called cilia, Latin for eyelashes, see figure 12.6. The action of the accelerated fluid moving faster than normal through the chambers of the ventricular system tickles the tiny hairs, which overstimulates the pineal gland. Because the pineal gland is shaped like a phallus, the stimulation produced by the acceleration of fluid moving past it, combined with the electrical activation created by an increase in intrathecal pressure in a closed system, causes the gland to ejaculate some very profound, upgraded metabolites of melatonin into the brain. You're now one step closer to activating the pineal gland and having a transcendental experience. 3. Energy is delivered directly to the brain. Much like sending a rocket ship into space, overcoming gravity to get it off the ground is the part that requires the most energy. So to move that energy from our lower centers demands a great deal of intensity and effort. The breath becomes our passionate intention to free ourselves from the self-limiting emotions of our past. The spinal column becomes the delivery mechanism for this energy, and the top of the head becomes the target. As you know by now, every time you perform the breath, you send charged particles up the spinal column. As these particles increase in velocity and acceleration, they create what's known as an inductance field. See figure 12.7. This inductance field reverses the flow of two-way information that typically facilitates communication from the brain to the body and the body to the brain. Much like a vacuum, the inductance field draws the energy from those lower centers. Energy involved with orgasm, consumption, digestion, fight or flight stress, and control, and delivers it directly to the brainstem in a spiraling motion. As the energy travels up through each vertebrae, it passes the nerves that run from the spinal cord to different parts of the body, and some of that energy is then transferred through the peripheral nerves that affect the tissues and organs of the body. The current that runs along these nerve channels activates the body's meridian system, resulting in all other systems of the body getting more energy. Once the energy reaches the brain stem, it must pass through the reticular formation. It's the job of the reticular formation to constantly edit information going from the brain to the body, as well as from the body to the brain. This formation is part of a system called the Reticular Activating System, RAS, which is responsible for levels of wakefulness. For instance, when you wake up from a deep sleep because you hear a sound in your house, it's the RAS that alerts you and arouses you. That's its rudimentary function. However, as the sympathetic nervous system is activated and merges with the parasympathetic nervous system, instead of depleting the body's stored energy, it releases that energy back to the brain. Once this energy reaches the brain stem, the thalamic gate opens like a door and energy moves through the reticular formation to the thalamus, where it relays information to the neocortex. Now the reticular formation is open and you experience greater levels of awareness. In a sense, you become more conscious and awakened. Think of the thalamus as a big train station with tracks leading to higher centers of the brain. That's how the brain goes into gamma brainwave patterns. As a side note, there are two individual thalami in the midbrain, one on each side, which feed each hemisphere in the neocortex. The pineal gland sits right between them, facing the back of the brain. See figure 12.8. When the energy reaches each thalamic junction, remember the thalamus is like a relay station to all other parts of the brain. These thalami send a message directly to the pineal gland to secrete its metabolites into the brain. The effect is that the thinking neocortex becomes aroused and goes into higher brainwave patterns like gamma. The nature of those chemical derivatives of melatonin relaxes the body and at the same time awakens the mind. If you remember, when you're in beta brainwaves, your sympathetic nervous system is aroused for an emergency in your outer world and utilizes energy to survive. The difference with gamma brainwaves is that instead of losing vital energy, you're liberating and creating more energy in your body. You're not in any emergency or survival state when this occurs. You're in bliss, and your sympathetic nervous system is switching on to arouse you to pay more attention to whatever is happening within your mind. In Chapter 5, I said that when energy moves from the body to the brain, a torus field is created around the body. As you run a current up your spinal column by accelerating the movement of cerebrospinal fluid, your body becomes like a magnet and you create an electromagnetic field around it. A torus field represents a dynamic flow of energy. At the same time the torus field is moving up, out and around your body, when the pineal gland becomes activated, a reverse torus field of electromagnetic energy is drawing energy into your body through the top of your head. Since all frequency carries information, now your pineal gland is receiving information from beyond the visible light field and from beyond your senses. See figure 12.9. When these three happenings occur in tandem, it's going to feel like you're having an orgasm in your head. You've now created an antenna in your brain, and this antenna is picking up information from realms beyond matter and beyond space and time. Information is no longer coming from your senses, or your eye's interaction with your environment. Instead, you're getting information from the quantum field moving to another eye, your third eye, from the pineal gland in the back of your brain. When melatonin gets an upgrade, magic happens. When your pineal gland, or the third eye, is awakened, because it is picking up higher frequencies, these higher energies alter the chemistry of melatonin. The higher the frequency, the greater the alteration. It's this translation of information into chemistry that primes you for those transcendental, mystical moments. Now you're opening the door to higher dimensions of space and time. This is why I like to call the pineal gland an alchemist, because it transmutes melatonin into some very profound, radical neurotransmitters. Take a look at figure 12.10. As higher frequencies and higher states of consciousness interact with the pineal gland, one of the first things to happen is that these frequencies transmute melatonin into chemicals called benzodiazepines. Benzodiazepines are a class of drugs from which Valium is created that anesthetize the analytical mind, so all of a sudden the thinking brain relaxes and stops analyzing. According to functional brain scans, benzodiazepines suppress neural activity in the amygdala, the brain's survival center. This limits chemicals that cause you to feel fear, anger, agitation, aggression, sadness, or pain. Now your body feels calm and relaxed, but your mind is awakened. Another chemical created from melatonin produces a class of very powerful antioxidants called pinolines. See figure 12.10. Pinolines are important because they attack free radicals, which harm your cells and cause aging. These antioxidants are anti-cancer, anti-aging, anti-heart disease, anti-stroke, anti-neurodegenerative, anti-inflammatory, and antimicrobial. That's a perfect formula to upgrade melatonin's normal role as an antioxidant to the role of a supercharged antioxidant that further restores and heals the body to a greater degree than the melatonin molecule normally does. See the powerful antioxidants listed in figure 12.10 that are all produced from metabolites of melatonin. If you take that molecule and tweak it again into a cousin of melatonin, you find the same chemical that makes animals hibernate. When melatonin, which makes us sleepy and dreamy, alters just slightly into this more powerful molecule, it carries a message to extend rest and repair even further. This message also causes the body's metabolism to slow, in some cases for months. It makes sense, then, that when mammals hibernate, they break the typical habits of their habitat. For example, they lose their sex drive, their appetite, their interest in or need to move about in their environment, and their connection to social networks. They hide to protect themselves and to feel safe, and during this time of going within, their body goes into stasis. The same might be true for us as these values elevate. Because the body is no longer the mind, we temporarily lose our interest in the outer world. And because we have no biological drives and aren't distracted with bodily needs, we're able to move more fully into the present moment and go deeply within. If you're going to dream the dream of the future, wouldn't it be a good idea to get your body out of the way? If you take that molecule and advance it yet again, you produce the same chemical found in electric eels, a phosphorescent, bioluminescent chemical that amplifies energy in the nervous system. You can refer to figure 12.10 again. This chemical can be powerful enough to cause a significant shock. I have a strong hunch this is the rare chemical that influences the brain to process those increased amplitudes of energy that we've repeatedly measured in our students. Just imagine an electric eel that literally lights up with energy when it gets stimulated. That's what happens in the brain when it gets activated. But the energy and information that are created do not come from an experience in our environment that we perceive through our senses, but instead from within the brain, caused by an upgrade in frequency. When we see those high energy levels in the brain, we know that the person is having a profound, subjective experience that can be measured objectively. Think about that for a moment.